Well, welcome to Bigger, Bolder, Braver. My name is Larry Horwitz, and I have the great pleasure to serve as a board of directors member for the Brewers Association on your behalf. And it is my great pleasure this afternoon to introduce our speaker for this session, Ann Handley. I'll mention a couple of things up front just from a housekeeping standpoint. When it comes to the question and answer session, which we will likely have at the end, please get to a microphone to ask your question. These sessions are being recorded, and the room is quite large. It's difficult to hear from the stage if you don't use the mic. Also, a shameless plug for the app for this convention. Inside that app, you'll find the opportunity to give feedback about this session and any other session you may attend. I encourage you to do that. That helps us select content that you want to see at the Craft Brewers Convention. So let's talk a little bit about Ann. Ann Handley is a Wall Street Journalist best-selling author who speaks worldwide about how businesses can escape marketing mediocrity to ignite tangible results. IBM named her one of the seven people shaping modern marketing. She's a digital marketing pioneer and the chief content officer of Marketing Profs, the leading marketing training company with more than 600,000 subscribers. She's also a Wall Street Journal best-selling author of Everybody Writes, your go-to guide to creating ridiculously good content, and co-author of Content Rules, how to create killer blogs, podcasts, videos, ebooks, webinars, and more that engage customers and ignite your business. Ann lives in Boston, where she is mom to creatures two and four-legged. She's an E.B. White superfan, a Cavalier King Charles Spanish enthusiast, say that three times fast, and a novice tap dancer, which I'm stoked about. I want to see some action from that later. I promised I'd wiggle. Maybe she'll dance too. There we go. Jazz hands. She escapes it all by retreating to her tiny house office, which houses her vintage typewriter collection. So please join me in welcoming Ann Handley.
How we doing? It's so awkward when someone's reading your bio and you realize you should have been backstage, and instead you're mulling around right here, and it's like, I don't know what to do with my body right now, because it's just embarrassing. I don't know why everybody is sitting way back. This is not Blue Man Group. Nothing's going to fall from the stage and get you wet. I'll tell you what, though. You're going to want to move forward for two reasons. Number one, so I can see you. We can have more of a moment together. And number two, because I have prizes, but I'm only giving prizes to people who sit in the first section. And the prizes are really, really good, okay? So here's your opportunity. You should move down. All right, what are the prizes, you're wondering? I'll tell you, I have a lovely bottle of Freem that I just found back here. I don't know what it's doing back there, but I'm going to give this away during the presentation today. I also found, I have a bottle opener. Yes. Yes. This is a limited edition. You cannot find these anywhere else. So don't even go looking in the expo center or anything like that, because... And then finally, I have bottles of Dasani. It's a this is a limited edition bottle of water. You can find them at places like really high-end stores like, Target. That's a joke, guys. All right. So you ready to get going? All right. What are these? Shout it out to me. Bats. This is how we're used to seeing bats. They're kind of hanging upside down. But here's the thing. When you flip this photo the other way, 1 minute. Yes. When you flip this photo the other way, this is how they look. They're sort of completely different creatures, aren't they? They're ready to party, you know what I mean? They're sassy. So why am I showing you this picture? Why did I just flip this upside down? It's because what I want to do today is maybe inspire you to think about your own marketing, to think about leadership a little bit differently. To think about getting a little inspiration from these bats, right? So not just think about it the way you always have thought about it, but maybe think about it in a little bit different of a way, right? Think about these upside down bats. I am not from your industry. I've spent a lot of time looking at your websites. I've spent a lot of time researching it. But I'm going to show you some examples today, some brands who I think are doing things really interesting that are not in your industry. Because sometimes I think the best place to get a little inspiration is kind of outside of these walls, right? It's sort of outside of this room. So I'm going to show you some examples of companies who are in completely different industries, but who I think we can learn from. Guys, this is not working. Oh, yes, it is. All right, never mind. So anyway, hi, you've already heard who I am today. How are we going to talk about this? We're going to talk about this through the lens of three things, of being bigger, of telling bigger stories, of being bigger leaders, of being a little bolder in how we're communicating, both as ourselves as well as brands, and how to be a little braver, how to have a braver tone of voice in what we're talking about. That's why I wrote my last book, Everybody Writes, because I wanted to give marketers, businesses, entrepreneurs, organizations a sort of guidebook to how do we do this better? How do we tell the kind of stories that are going to engage the people that we want to engage? How do we actually connect with our customers or our prospects or our would-be customers? So why do I think this is so important today? Why are we all here gathered in this room together? There are three really important reasons. And the first is why I think we need to be bigger, bolder, braver, is that we live in a really, really noisy world. Like, look at this wheel of busy right here, every day, every second of every day, I'm sorry, every minute of every day. 347,000 tweets are sent. So many things posted to Facebook. Like, this is the world we live in. Our brands are connecting and our brands are actually competing with this. This is hard to compete with as brands, but also as individuals. So this is for all the data people in the room, but here's the story that really tells a picture that really tells a story for me. Has anybody been to a party like this recently? This is the world that we live in now. Actually, this isn't a party. This is my house at dinner the other night. And yes, we wear sequins. So that's how we are. We're very fancy people. Marketing Profs does a bit of research. Marketing Profs is my company, and every year we do a bit of research, and we look at sort of the state of content marketing. And most recently we found that 73% of businesses of all kinds, including breweries, but all kinds of organizations, are producing more marketing content than we were a year ago. So we're doing things like posting to Instagram, posting to social media, writing blog posts, creating videos perhaps. We're creating lots and lots of stuff. We're producing more now than we did a year ago. But yet, just 35% of us know that the content marketing that we're producing is actually connecting with the people we want to connect with. So we're posting lots of things. We keep producing things like left and right. We keep trying to connect with people. But it's not always working, right? It's not always getting what we need. It's not always... Yeah. Do you know what? He never catches it. Ever. I've watched this for like an hour. He never catches it. This is sort of the metaphor for, I feel, where a lot of us as businesses are. We're trying our hardest, right? We just keep posting stuff, and we're hoping that the customer will catch it, right? It just doesn't always happen. And he's fine, by the way. You can tell that he's loved, right? You can tell. He just has that vibe about him. I just love it so much. So the second reason why I think it's important for us to be having this conversation today is sort of that mainstream thing that's specific to your industry, right? It used to be, actually, my own town never had a brewery. Now we have three. I can walk to one of them. Well, you guys all know this better than I do, right? It's so much more saturated than it used to be. So you have to really connect with the customers in a different way, right? You have to tell your story differently. And finally, it's about leadership. Because I think to be an effective leader, you have to be visible, right? Not only within your organization, but within your communities as well, right? Your customers have to see you. So I think all of these things are why we're having this conversation today. In the research that I referenced a second ago, I mentioned that you know we found that more marketers and more businesses are creating more and more content. Yet, how to create the kind of content that engages with the people we're trying to connect with is the top challenge and has been for the past 8 years that we've been producing this research. So engaging content is absolutely the top challenge. But here's the thing. I think that engaging content is far more about brains than it is about budget. So it's not about the person who has the biggest amount of money in the room, not the person who has the biggest pile of cash. Instead, I think it's the person who thinks most strategically about how do we actually create marketing that doesn't feel like marketing, but instead feels like something that our customers value, that they want, that they appreciate, right? Something that feels like us, that feels authentic. All right, so I'm going to pause here and tell you a story about canned koozies. You know what canned koozies are? Yeah. I'll tell you a really sad story. I've told this story before to some business-to-business audiences, and when I say this, do you know what canned koozies are? They go, what? What is a canned koozie? Is that sad? Like, my heart aches for those people. Anyway, so this is a love story. It's about my brother, Bill. He's here with our nephew, Ben. My brother, Bill, is a big beer guy. He loves beer. He lives in Chandler, Arizona, just outside of Phoenix, where it's like, I don't know what how hot it is right now, but it's like probably like 148 degrees, like right now. It's like for you scientists in the room, it's like 8 Kelvin. You know what I mean? It's like really hot, even now, this time of year. And so the problem that my brother had was that he'd want like a canned koozie to put around his beer when he was out working in the yard or whatever. The problem was, though, that most of the canned koozies that you see are like this. There's a whole ton of them over in the expo area, right? They have like a logo on them. You probably have some that you've produced as well. But my brother didn't want this, right? He wanted something that was more quirky, that was more like him, because he's a quirky kind of guy. And so he Googled. He Googled canned koozie, and he tried to find one that he felt like was more reflective of his personality. So he finds one that describes itself like this. This beverage insulator keeps your bottled drinks cooler for longer, plus folds flat for maximum pocket portability. He's like, cool. Click, he buys it. It turns out to be this. It does fold flat for maximum pocket portability. He continues to Google. He finds one that describes itself like this. Our beverage insulator fits your bottle or can like a glove. And it's true, it was a glove. It's like a drink insulator made out of deer skin. He also found this one. I'm not sure what the animal is, but I think the Latin name is like Rhodkillus. Is that what it is? Would it be in Latin? Rhodkillus maximus, something like that. He continues to Google. He finds one that describes itself as classier than a brown bag, which I actually kind of love. It turns out to be this. It's made out of, you know, like a boiled wool. He also finds this one, which is a hollowed out log. It weighs about 40 pounds. So it doubles as like an exercise, you know, like as you lift it up, like your biceps are like swing, like they. Finally, my brother discovers a company called Freaker USA. And this is what Freaker USA looks like. It's a little sweater that fits around anything from a bottle or a can to a wine bottle. It's a stretchy fabric that insulates almost anything, any beverage that you have. Here's how Freaker USA describes itself. Infusing lifestyle and functionality into a drink insulator. Established in 2011, Freaker USA grew to be the global leader of preventing moist handshakes and sweaty beverages. They aren't just selling you their fit everything product, they're giving you an invitation to their party. a starter kit for a new lifestyle. The Freaker is the background music to a never-ending journey. Like, doesn't this sound different? It doesn't sound like the boiled wool koozie or the roadkillus maximus koozie, right? It sounds completely different. The way they describe themselves is completely different. This is from their website, but they do this all across their social channels, even in their, like, executive bios. Here's how they describe their president. "We kidnapped and trafficked Michael Barr to North Carolina from his ancestral motherland of Minnesota in 2013, forcing him into presidency." Then it says, "He's the Cialis to our performance anxiety." Isn't that so great? I called up Lauren Kirkauskas, who is their director of marketing at Freaker USA in North Carolina. And I had two questions for her. I was like, "What?" And my second question was like, "What?" Like, I've never seen a company that describes itself like this. And she said, "Here's the thing, Anne. When you sell a product that most people get free at trade shows, your story is the start of the thing that sets you apart." And I think this is such a powerful way to frame your marketing. Your story is the start of the thing that sets you apart. So you don't sell something like Freakers, but think about what Freaker is doing here. They're absolutely bigger, right? They're telling a bigger story. They're not just talking about the attributes of this little sweater that insulates your beverage. They're not just telling you what it does. They're putting it in the context of your life. They're also very brave. Like, that Cialis line, like, I've never seen another executive bio anywhere that would ever describe their president that way. Although, could you? If you would do that, we could be friends. They're also bold, though, right? They have a very bold, different tone of voice. If you were to cover up the logo on the Freaker website, if you were to cover up the product on the Freaker website, they sound different, right? You would recognize them just through the words that they use, the way they describe themselves, the way they talk about themselves. You would recognize their story. I think of great marketing like this, right? Awesome marketing is all the things that you see sort of on the outside. But I do think it takes some element of guts because you have to stand out a little bit. You have to repel people from you who are not going to like your story as much as attract people to you, because those are your true fans, right? Those are the people that are really going to resonate, that are going to resonate most with your most authentic story. Okay, so how do we do this? You don't sell koozies. You can't use that Cialis line, although I really want you to, and I've implored you now twice. So you don't do it. How do you think about this? How can we actually apply this to our own business? The first is to think about a bigger context. Think about a bigger context for your own business. So I was driving down the road in South Dakota recently. I saw a sign on the side of the road. You know, the hut? It said the hut. Underneath it, it said... We know. You know how we know? Because it's in the name. This is an example of something that I see all the time in marketing, right? It's corporate-centric messaging. And tune your ear for it, and you'll recognize it too as soon as you see it. It's people who love to talk about themselves. We have this. No one cares that you have this. Instead, tell me what it does for me. That's the bigger context. A bigger story really puts your brewery, your business, in the context of what people care about. You're putting yourself in the context of their lives, whatever that story might be, and then use that story to convert more people into your tribe, into your community, into your squad. Because that's the point, right? You want to connect with those people specifically. Don't worry about everybody else. I talk to marketers and businesses all the time who start their content strategy here. They start their marketing here. We need a piece of marketing for, because we have the monthly email going out, right? Because we have a mailer that we mail to our local community homes, right? We need a piece of marketing for what? Instead, I think the better place to start is the second line here. Our customer needs what? What does our customer need from us? What is the thing that our business provides that our customer really needs? It's not your product. It could be a sense of belonging. I don't know what it is. You need to ask yourself this question, right? But what does your customer need from you? What are you really offering them? What do you actually provide? So Blue Bottle Coffee is a coffee company based in Oakland, California. They're sort of the anti-Starbucks, right? They're a smaller, they're a chain, but they're smaller, right? They're not on every corner. They're in very select cities throughout the U.S. I don't know if they're here in Chicago. Do you know if they're here in Chicago? Blue Bottle? Yeah. Let me try that again. I just said Chicago, and I'm wondering, Courtney, why aren't you answering me? Courtney's like, what the hell are you saying? Anyway, are they here in Denver? Okay, I don't know why I did that. All right, so here's the thing. There's a couple of them. There is actually one in Boston where I am pretty sure I live. I don't even know anymore, but I'm pretty sure that I live in Boston. They're sort of in select markets throughout the U.S., let me say. They just opened up one in Tokyo. And I had noticed Blue Bottle Coffee when I had gone to San Francisco on business, you know, every once in a while. What I had really noticed was the line of people, like, standing outside the Blue Bottle store. They're standing in a queue. Like, they have the stanchions set up, you know, because it gets unruly otherwise. And I was like, why do people stand in line for a cup of coffee? I could just, like, go over there to the Starbucks and, like, walk right up to the counter. So what's really going on there? What had really piqued my interest about Blue Bottle Coffee, though, was when I happened to notice that they had produced a class on Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning platform. You can go anything. You can go on there to learn anything from, oh, I don't know, wedding calligraphy to small business accounting. Like, they have thousands and thousands of courses. What I had noticed on Skillshare was that Blue Bottle Coffee had produced a class called How to Brew an Amazing Cup of Coffee. And I was like, that's so ridiculous. It's an hour-long class on how to brew coffee. And it got super, super granular, no pun intended, on, like, you know, 8 minutes on selecting your ingredients and then making your recipe and 12 minutes on brewing your coffee, 8 minutes on tasting your coffee, and you can't even enjoy it until the 10th segment. And it's like another 2 minutes right there. It gets like super, super, super specific. I thought, this is the most asinine thing I've ever seen. Like, who's going to take an hour-long class on how to brew coffee? I've been drinking coffee my whole adult life. I don't need to know how to do it. So I took it because I wanted to mock it in a way, right? I was like, this is so silly. But it turns out that the joke was actually on me. It turns out that there was a whole lot that I didn't know about coffee. Like, I didn't know the difference between burr grinding and blade grinding. I didn't know the difference between beans from Guatemala and beans from Indonesia. Like, I learned a whole lot. It got super, super involved, very deep. And in the end, guess what? I became a customer. It turns out that Blue Bottle just doesn't have stores. They actually have a pretty robust subscription product. And so I became a Blue Bottle subscriber. The reason why I like this so much from a content marketing perspective is because it really gave me deep value, right? This is a lesson that I think we can all take away from this. It delivered deep value to me, and I came away a sort of smarter customer, right? It elevated my level of knowledge at a much deeper level, right? This wasn't like a blog post on five things or five ways to enjoy a cup of coffee. No, instead, it was an hour-long class. It was a little bit of commitment on my part, but as a result of this, I came away a very smart customer for Blue Bottle Coffee. I also love the way that they used Michael Phillips as their spokesperson, right? They didn't hire a talking head. Instead, they had Michael Phillips, who is the Blue Bottle Coffee director of training. He's standing there with a video camera pointed at him, and he's just sharing his deep expertise and his knowledge of coffee over the course of this hour. He's not super polished. It's sort of like lots of ums and. At one point, he thinks he's in Chicago and he's in Denver. There's a lot of little mistakes going on, right? But that's okay, because it felt really real. Like, I trusted him, because he knew what he was talking about, and it wasn't overly scripted and overly polished. So I think there's a lot of things we can take away from this. First is that absolutely, it's putting Blue Bottle in a bigger context. It's putting it in a much bigger context. It wasn't about how to enjoy a blue bottle coffee. Instead, it was making me a smarter coffee consumer more broadly. And yeah, blue bottle branding is all over it, but that wasn't the point. Instead, it was a broader story about coffee generally. It was also a real class, as I said, with a real curriculum, and it was really engaging because Michael was just being very real. I love the idea of education as marketing. What is in it for the customer? Why should they care? Because in the end, you want them to feel smarter, but more importantly, you want them to feel part of something, right? You want them to feel a sense of alignment with you, with your company, with your brand. I think Wiseacre does this really well in Memphis, Tennessee. Part of their website is dedicated to education. And some of you might have this, but I love their approach in particular. They talk about their beers on there. They talk about the attributes of them. So, for example, in one of their beers, Comfort Hunter, it says, perfect for a long day of drinking. Comfort Hunter is a light-bodied beer with a dry, roasty, espresso-like finish. It almost feels like a little bit like a dating profile. Do you find that? Just me? But then it goes on from there, and it gets super chatty, right? It's super interesting. Though many porters and stouts are still pretty close in color and flavor, we can look to the addition of unmalted roasted barley in stouts, and then it goes on from there. The first use of it is often attributed to Arthur Guinness in Ireland. Arthur, we are great friends. He calls me at home. You see what I'm saying? The way it's written, it doesn't feel like I'm being lectured to. Instead, it was sort of like it reminded me so much of Michael Phillips. It's just real talk from a real person with a real byline. Not this sort of faceless edifice, but a real person with real voice sharing what's so special about this beer. I think it's important for everybody in this room, especially if you are a founder or if you are part of the founding team, turn that camera around, right? Let your customers see you online. Let them see your face. Let them see your quirks. It's okay if you have ums and ahs. It's okay if you screw up. Like, that's what makes us human. That's what people love. That's what they connect with. My friend Andres Lagston owns a company in just south of Boston called Stoat & Steel. Andres is an amazing home cook. What Stoat & Steel does, his dad was the founder. Andres has taken over the business from his dad. And what Stoat & Steel does is they make they're a steel fabrication company, and they make the foots that go on backhoes, like the stabilizer foots for backhoes. But as I said, Andres's real passion was cooking. That was really that's always been what he's about. And one day he read in a book that the best conductor for pizza crust, right, for a home pizza, is a piece of steel. So here he is making pizza. He went into the shop and he made this. It's called the baking steel. It's a flat piece of steel that he made just in the Stoat & Steel headquarters. He went onto Kickstarter. And this is the way he described the baking steel. Create the crust you crave. So it wasn't about just creating crust at home. It was that use of the word crave that I love so much, right? Because he's telling the story. He's saying, what's in it for you? He was funded on Kickstarter. He went into production. And then he really kicked it into high gear with his marketing. And he decided to turn that camera around. He decided that the story was not creating crust you crave. Instead, it was going to be about him. He said, no one is going to match my passion. He told me, no one is going to tell my story like I can. So that's what he did. He started on YouTube. Look at him. He's like a crazy pizza guy, isn't he? He just has that kind of vibe about him. He started talking about sourcing tomatoes and why you should buy this can versus that can. He knows a whole lot about tomatoes. He knows a whole lot about 72-hour dough. These are the things that he's educating his audience on. He started on YouTube. He's since gone to Instagram. He bought an amazing camera. This is like pizza porn at this point, right? He's just super into it. And this is what Andres came to at the end. It was about creating some love. Because, yeah, you want to create, you want to have a good pizza at home. The crust you crave is part of the story, but really it's about doing it together as a family, right? Doing it in your home oven. So this is where his brand went to. Create some love is really what Baking Steel is all about. I love the way that Peabody Heights Brewing, actually in Baltimore, focuses on bettering their community. But one of the things that I really love about their Instagram is that they say it right on there. And they also continue this story all across their website, across all of their channels. And I think that's something that we have to remember, right? That's what omnichannel means in a sort of marketing context. Does the experience that somebody has with your brand over here match what you're about? And does it match what happens over there as well, right? So think about, are you telling the story consistently across every customer touch point? Not from your own point of view, but from their point of view. Is the story consistent across everything? All right, so to wrap this up, when you think about telling your bigger story, start here, right? Answer this question for you, for your brand. Only we what? What are you all about? What do you do that no other brewery does? What are you about? What's specific to your brand, to your place in the community? Whatever it may be, what is it that only you do? All right, you doing okay out there? All right, kind of quiet. Okay. All right, my second point here today is bolder marketing. How do we create bolder marketing to tell a bolder story, right? How do we be bolder leaders in our community? I think the key here is to change the narrative. You know, every industry has this sort of narrative that everybody else tells. So how can you disrupt that story to tell your own, right? That's where the only we comes in. Only you what? This is my friend Corey O'Loughlin. She's here with her husband Mike and their two really cute kids. Can we talk about their outfits? I know. I know it seems like this is Easter Sunday or even a Sunday. It's not. It's Tuesday. And they're like going to Costco, you know? Because this is how they look all the time. So Corey texted me something recently, and it was a site, a microsite called Do Your Partner. So let me break it down for you. It's Do Your Partner is about doing your partner. Okay? It's published by a baby food company by the name of Plum Organics. And there's all kinds of, I don't know, information on there, I guess. Like the whole soundtrack of this is like a Barry White kind of vibe, you know what I mean? There's all kinds of ways to encourage parents to reconnect with one another. The genesis for this site was a bit of research that Plum Organics had done with this woman. Her name is Esther Perel. She's a psychotherapist. She's a really well-known author. She has an incredible podcast on relationships. Plum Organics did some research with Esther Perel in which they found things like this, that 70% of parents feel guilty when they're away from their child for a night out. Or like Valentine's Day. Used to be a couple's holiday, now it's a family holiday, right? Going to Target, it's all about the family now on Valentine's Day. Parents forget what originally drew them to one another when they become parents, right? Because it all becomes about the kids. So Plum Organics is like, let's change that. So they published Do Your Partner as a way to remind parents that it's important for them to stay connected as a couple as well and not just make it about the family. At which point, Esther Perel was like, guys, what the heck does this have to do with baby food? I'm going to break it down for you. You ready? More sex means happier parents who have more kids who eat more baby food. Like, like what? This is like the Gerber baby just had an aneurysm. You know what I mean? This is like such a different way to market baby food. Because, yeah, they're talking about things like parent sex. Baby food companies don't talk about parent sex. They just talk about the kids and how great they are, right? We have pizza. That's what that's about. But they're saying, no, no, no. There's this whole other story that never gets told. That's what I love about their marketing. Do Your Partner was the first iteration of the campaign that Plum Organics told, right, that they published. But that's not really their bigger story. It's not about that. Instead, their bigger story is about this. It's about parenting unfiltered. It's about creating an open dialogue between the real lives of modern parents, right? So it's not this sort of, you know, candy-coated kind of cutesy kind of look at parenting. This is like real talk. This is like the real lives. This is what actually happens. And they do this all across their social channels as well. The next version of the Do Your Partner campaign, which actually came, it's no longer available, I'm sorry, it's not up anymore. The next iteration of it is this, called Parenting Unfiltered. It's surviving the first year of parenting because there's so much stress that goes on in the first year when a couple becomes a parent. So this becomes sort of part rallying cry and kind of part field guide. And like, doesn't this photo kind of say it all? You know, this is like real. This is like what it's about. The Parenting Filtered hashtag is something that they try to use all across their social channels. They've tagged influencers as part of this program to help them talk about Parenting Unfiltered. Again, real talk, not this sort of, you know, sugar-coated kind of talk. So they do things like this, like on their Instagram, right? How it looks, how it actually feels, like we all been there. It's like real talk. The thing that I love about the Plum Organics approach to Parenting Unfiltered is that this is how they think about their place in the market. They think of themselves as team parent, right? Peer-to-peer, not brand-to-consumer. Such an important distinction. A lot of marketers think all the time about brands-to-consumers. They talk about their consumers in this sort of, you know, unhuman language, like email segments. You know, they talk about blasting a list, right? It's not about that. It's not about personas. It's about people, right? It's peer-to-peer, not brand-to-consumer. The other thing that I really like about this is, as I mentioned, this isn't just a sort of BS marketing speak. I see marketing campaigns all the time that sort of have that vibe to them. It's like you look at it and you're like, nah, it feels like marketing. This does not feel like marketing. It doesn't feel like BS marketing speak. How do they accomplish this? It's because Plum Organics, this is sort of their secret sauce for how they approach the conversation that they're having in their industry. They have a pretty robust look. They have a pretty robust data set, right? They look at data all the time. They look at how campaigns perform. They measure it against, you know, over time to look for patterns and how things are performing. They also have a really robust social listening program, which includes a panel of influencers that they work with on a regular basis to figure out what's actually the real lives of modern parents. What's it actually look like? But they also look at this last part, instinct. I think in our data-driven world, we forget that the art and the instinct of marketing matters so much. So it's not just about what can you prove, but it's about what do you know in your heart, like as a marketer, as a business owner, as somebody who cares deeply about your product, about your business, what do you know to be true, right? This is just as important as everything else. And it's something that I think a lot of us are discounting these days, but it's so important. Katie Sobel, who worked for Plum Organics, told me, she said, whether it's product development or messaging, it starts with an intimate knowledge of and camaraderie with our consumer as a parent and as a person. And I love this part so much, camaraderie with our consumer as a parent and as a person. I hardly ever hear that, and I don't know why. Because we want to connect with people. That's the promise of this sort of open web, right? That's the promise of social media, of being able to connect with people. But yet camaraderie with is something that I don't hear enough about. So I asked Corey, why did you share this with me? What was it about it? And she said, you're going to put this in a presentation, aren't you? And I said, no. Why would I do that? She's like, yeah, of course I'm going to put it in a presentation. She said, at first I was shocked, and then I shared it with like 14 people, and I posted it to my mom group on Facebook. She said, I shared it because it resonated. It was the truth of the crazy stage of life that me and my friends are in. It made me think they get it. Like, that is like, that's community right there. They get it. That's like squad goals, right? She felt like they understood her at a level that no other baby food company really understands. I think that in social media, online, we hear a lot about being part of the conversation. Like, be part of the conversation, you know, chime in. But I don't think that's what we in this room want to do. I don't think it's about following the conversation. I think we want to lead it. So what's the conversation that you can lead? Like, only we, and then what's the conversation that you can lead? What story comes to mind when I say to you, like, try to think of a story about a mobile carrier.
Network.
Yeah. There's like a few. Nothing really. It's mostly crickets. This is what I think of when I think of mobile carrier. I think of this guy, John Legere. He's the CEO of T-Mobile. John Legere has a cooking show on Facebook called Slow Cooker Sundays. He's the CEO of this, like, bajillion-dollar company, right? He's got a lot going on. But yet every Sunday, he has a cooking show on Facebook called Slow Cooker Sundays. And we'll play you just a little clip of it so you can get a feel for what this is.
Oh. Sunday! Wow, I can't believe it's Sunday again. And the news of the day is, here on the camera is... Dog! Tuesday Dave is on the camera again. Okay, so happy Slow Cooker Sunday, everybody. Wow, I've been all over the place this week. I know a lot of you have as well. Weather's been crazy. I was in Bellevue, in Seattle quite a bit, and then Bellingham, which I'm going to talk to you about. And now I get a brief stop here in Florida. And I'll tell you what, those of you in snow, one day in the sun makes a whole bit of a difference. But I also have something else for cold and flu season, for the time when it's so cold out, because today I'm going to be making a delicious turkey ginger soup. Show them that picture, Dave. Amazing. It's cold and flu season, even if I'm in Florida, and this thing I'll tell you all about. But before we do it, there's a couple other things that I have to get into this conversation.
So then he goes on and he talks about T-Mobile for a few minutes and some things that are going on. He talks about T-Mobile Tuesdays, which is on Tuesdays. You can go down to a T-Mobile store and they usually have some sort of giveaway for T-Mobile customers. I love how authentic this is. Like, do you see how it's actually kind of bad video? You know, it's not great. It's not polished. It's not highly produced at all. Like, George behind the camera, I don't know where he came from. Like, he's clearly not clued in on how to do camera work very well. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. And that million people who tune in on Sundays to watch him and then watch it throughout the week, like, they don't even care. I went back he's been doing this for 3 years, and I went back 3 years because I was like, I wonder what happened, like, the first time that he did this. Hilarious. He didn't even have the camera turned the right way. First time, it was, like, sideways. And he was just him doing it. He didn't have George, the camera guy, at that point. And so at midway, he realizes that it's sideways because he finally reads the comments. He, like, puts on his glasses, and he looks down, and he finally reads the comments, and then he turns it up right side up. But anyway, the reason I'm telling you this story is because this seems like it's a weird thing for a mobile carrier CEO to do. But the reason he's done it is because it's so consistent with his brand and where he's taking T-Mobile. As a result of that, T-Mobile has gone from this sort of also-ran, at one point they were way in the dust, to the number three mobile carrier after Verizon and AT&T. So he's done an amazing job just with branding him, turning the camera around, making sure that he's part of the story, and relating to people in a very honest, real, authentic way. Like in marketing, we hear this word all the time, authentic. I hate that word because I don't even know what it means half the time. It's like, what does it mean to be authentic? But this is authentic, right? This is real, and you can feel it. So does your marketing tell a different story with a specific point of view? Like, do you sound different? Or do you sound potentially like anybody else? Is the story you telling differentiated in some way because only you do this? All right, and my final point here today is braver perspective. How do we actually have a braver perspective and a recognizable view, right? How do we actually think about our marketing like Freaker? If you cover up your logo, you sound different. You recognize you. I think key to this is losing that marketing voice. We all have it. We all tend to write in it when we're writing to our database, right? Or when we're writing to our email list. We all sort of have this marketing voice when we think about producing marketing. So don't think about that. Lose that marketing voice. Just drop it. I think there are two places that we really need to think about our tone of voice as a differentiator. And by tone of voice, I mean how we sound, how we're writing, how we're communicating. Two biggest places. The first is email. Email, vastly undervalued. I signed up for a lot of email newsletters from breweries over the past couple weeks in anticipation of coming here, so I know we talk a lot on email about events that we're having. I had a really hard time finding an email newsletter that actually felt like it was coming to me from somebody at the brewery instead of just like this sort of faceless entity, right? So who is it going to come from? And why I think email is so important is because it's the only place now where people, not algorithms, are in control, right? Facebook, you can't get anywhere without paying, right? Everywhere on social media, it's all about the algorithm. But email is the most important place that we're connecting directly with somebody who wants to hear from us. So let's value and respect that space differently. Let's really use that opportunity to connect with another person directly, because that's what's going on, right? You're going directly into their inbox, just one person reading it. I think in business, we tend to think about the email newsletter in particular as something that we're undervaluing. In business, we think a lot about the first part, the newsletter. We send out a newsletter because we want to share news. We want to talk about something that we're doing. We want to clue our audience into something. We want to share news. We think of it as a distribution strategy, right? But instead, I think, instead of thinking of it as a newsletter, we should think of the second part of the word, which is the letter. Think about writing a letter to your audience, right? That's what your newsletter should really be. It should be from you to someone. Every day, a company called CB Insights sends me an email newsletter, and it's from Anand Sanwal, the CEO. CB Insights is a data technology company. They follow the startup space. So every day, Anand sends me an email, and it starts with, "Hi there." And every day, it ends with, "I love you." Legit does. Every day, he tells me and the 500,000 people on his email list that he loves us. This is a data technology company. It's pretty much the furthest thing you can get from any sort of touchy-feely thing, right? But yet, he does it. And I think that's why his list has grown from 1,400 subscribers in 2010 to 500,000 today. Actually, it should be 2019. 500,000 today. Because he starts there and he ends there, but in between, it's just as conversational and it's just as approachable, and he's interpreting the data technology space for anybody who's truly interested in what's going on. And I mentioned this already, but you might notice that the email address at the top, it comes from Anand Sanwal, and when you click on it, it's actually his real email address. My daughter Caroline is a college student, and this past summer she worked for a marketing agency in Boston, where we lived. And do you know what one of her jobs was at the marketing agency? It was to write the email newsletter. Like, Caroline is 21 years old, you know? She's like brilliant and beautiful, and it's not a knock against her. But do you know who should not be writing your email newsletter? Caroline. Like, don't let her write your email newsletter, because she's not the heart and soul of your brand, right? She's not the heart and soul of the company. She just landed there. Funny side story to that, though. Guess who ended up writing the email newsletter? This gal. I can't let her fail, you know? Warren Buffett is the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, right? And every year, Warren Buffett writes a letter to shareholders. It goes out to thousands of people who are part of the Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. It goes out to the press. It gets a lot of press. A lot of people write about it. It is widely anticipated. It's a great letter because he's interpreting what's going on at Berkshire Hathaway as well as what's going on globally in the world from a financial perspective for all of us, right, for everybody here. And people love it. It's widely anticipated. The way that he writes it, though, is really these three. It comes across in these three ways. It's very simple. The language he uses is very simple. The metaphors he uses are very simple. It's also very accessible, though. You understand it, even if you're not the sort of financial whiz. But yet, it's also sort of playful. So as I said, this goes out to, you know, thousands of Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. It goes out to the press. But do you know who Warren Buffett writes to when he writes his annual letter to shareholders? He writes to this gal. This is Warren's sister, Doris. Doris is a shareholder for Berkshire Hathaway, and this is who Warren has in his mind's eye when he's writing the letter to shareholders. He said that Doris is smart and she reads a lot. She doesn't know all the financial jargon, but she doesn't want to be treated like a five-year-old. He said, I try to say on paper what I'd tell her about the business if we sat down for an afternoon. So when you think about doing any of your own communication, when you think about your own email newsletter, think about that one person you're serving, right? Think about your Doris. Because I believe that writing to Doris is a kind of storytelling superpower. It automatically changes your vibe, right? It automatically changes your tone from writing to a segment, from brand to consumers, to peer to peer, right? From person to person. Just over a year ago, I launched my own email newsletter called Total Anarchy. And when I send it out every other Sunday, I don't think about the 15,000 people on my email list. Instead, I think about one person who I'm communicating with that week. It could be somebody who I met here at this event. It could be somebody that I communicated with over email. You know, it could be somebody who I met in the grocery store. But it's what sparked is a conversation that I had with one person. Right? So I don't think of a million people. Or I don't think of 15,000 people. I think of my Doris. I think of one subscriber. And why I think writing to Doris is a superpower is because it changes your tone. It becomes not this thing that we're blasting this email segment about, but rather there's this useful thing that I want to tell you about. So it makes your tone much more conversational. If you are curating links, for example, if you're letting folks know what's going on in your community, you won't just do a headline and a link. You'll say, headline, link, why this matters, because you want to communicate it to Doris. It also means that an email newsletter becomes not just one way, but two way. And that's why I think it's important that it be from somebody, because you want to encourage those people to write back to you. Tell me what you're thinking about. It's a great way to do market research on your own customers. Tell me what's on your mind. It also means that you don't fret about not my Doris. Like this guy, he signed up for my email newsletter recently, and can you see this? Neil, look at the email address he used. Low priority @. What? I deleted him instantly. He's not my Doris, so oh well. Or Anand Sonwal. He did some A-B testing on some email newsletter subject lines, and the one that won was 35 websites that are ugly AF, which means as freaky, right? Something like that, as fantastic, as, I don't know. Of course, some folks write in saying they're offended by the language. He said, he tweeted out, it's a free newsletter, don't like it, just unsubscribe and move on and don't write in. Okay, thanks, bye, right? Don't worry about those people who are not going to like what you do. They don't matter. They're not your Doris. Bill Penzies has an amazing newsletter that goes out almost every single day. I hesitate to call it a newsletter because it's a little bit of just straight up sales messaging, but it comes from Bill, and it's written by him. It's called Voice of Cooking. Here's how Bill thinks about his email newsletter, his newsletter program itself. Is that this is the sort of bigger story that Penzies Spice is telling. That cooking good food means caring about people, which means that we fearlessly care about our democracy. And then he gets super political, which makes probably most of us super uncomfortable. But he doesn't care because he's focusing on his Doris. So he's pretty liberal, and he's showing it. And I'm not saying that you should do this, but I'm saying only Bill does that, right? So only you do what? So, for example, a recent missive that went out, it's time for America to vote with our spending. This was just after the New Zealand shooting. Each act of cooking is an act of kindness, he said. With that realization, the scale has shifted. That for each of the 10 to 20 acts of horror that make up the news each day, there are at the same time hundreds of millions of acts of kindness. Says so much more about humankind than the news out of New Zealand. It is time for sensible gun control. We have to do better than this. This guy sells spices, but this is what he talks about. He gets a lot of grief for it. Yeah, I can see you nodding your head like, no, it's like, yeah, it's very offensive to some people. He gets a lot of grief for it, but he gets a lot of not grief for it too, because these are the peaks of right to Doris. The people who love him really love him. And again, remember, I'm not telling you to get political at all, but I'm saying, what's your point of view? What's your perspective? It doesn't have to be as edgy as this, But this guy knows his audience, and he's fine with it. What you're looking at here is that orange line. That's like his email program in 2017. The blue line with those peaks of right to doors, that's when he started getting super political, and that's when people started to react. On Facebook, for example, someone commented, someone saw my Penzies bumper sticker and said it was a political statement. I replied, you're right about that. Love your spices, recipes, and politics. Right? So as much as people love him, you're also going to have people who are not loving him. And he talks about that too. Crafty Brews is out of the UK. They do a sort of roundup of the state of craft beer in the UK. I love the conversational approach. They're a little edgy, a little snarky. Like, look at that subject line. Who loves a golden shower? Like, wow, okay. But just, I love their approach. It's very conversational. It's very fun. I feel like I know these guys. It's like, hello there. It's your good friend, the Crafty, back once again to bring you all the latest on craft beer here in the UK. Sales are up. The industry's booming. But you probably knew that already. And it goes on and on and on from there. It's very conversational in their approach. It comes from a real person. You feel like you know these guys. All right, the second point, the second part where I think we can think about tone of voice as a differentiator, first being email, second place is social media, especially Instagram. Vastly undervalued by most brands out there, including many in this room. I think the more specific that we can get with our Instagram, not just the photos, but the prose that's around it, the writing that's around it, the voice that we're using there, the more specific we get, typically the more stronger voice that we have. Aaron Draplin is a designer in Portland, Oregon. I love his Instagram so much because I love the voice that he uses there, the way it comes through. He's a big fan of yellow mustard. He said, he in Portland, Oregon, where he lives, I'll calmly inquire, can I get some yellow mustard? And every time it's some put-out, mouth-breathery reply, I'll have to check. Our mustard is an aioli-inspired, infused with Peruvian honey, small-batch dingleberries, with the dong sniff of sea salt. So good. I read this and I was like, what's a dong sniff? It's not even in the dictionary. There's no such thing as a dong sniff. But then my second question was, what's a dingleberry? I'm sorry, but I had to find out, so you have to find out too. If you remember nothing else from my talk today, remember that you learned what a dingleberry is, if you didn't know that already. So there's other places where I think we can think about tone of voice. Email, social media, email and Instagram being the two that come to the mind for me because I think that we're undervaluing them. But I think there's other places we can think about our About Us pages. Have fun there, right? You guys are in this business. It's not a boring business at all, right? Have a little fun there. Tell your story. Tell me why you're different, who you are. Use video there. It's a great use of video on the About Us pages. Popovers or landing pages, if you do anything like that as part of your business, another place to think about being a little fun with tone of voice of maybe pushing it a little bit. Microcopy at the top of an email, for example, that goes out. Video captions or Instagram, as already mentioned. Or even like your email confirmation pages. And I can't talk about email confirmation pages without going back to Freaker for a second. Because, you know, most of us are using email confirmation pages. We're just sort of letting whatever the default is of our provider, we're just using that. But don't do that, right? Think of it as an opportunity to tell your story differently. So here's what Freaker's email confirmation page says. When you sign up to be part of Freaker's program, it says, if you receive this email by a whoopsies, simply delete it. We won't haunt you with a subscription to our ass-kicking newsletter. You won't be delivered weekly sales and giveaways. And you will never know love. So go ahead and delete it if you must, but you've been warned. They also do things like this on social media. Like, why go to the gym? You can just lean up against a farm fence and get an automatic 12-pack. Second pro tip today, dingleberries, 12-pack. Remember that scene in Lion King? When he like holds up baby Simba and he's like, oh, Shiwamba Nani Sinama. Like everything the light touches is content, right? Everything our customer comes in contact with is an opportunity to tell our story. So look for those little moments when we can surprise people, when we can deliver something that's unexpected. Because I think there's tremendous power in making something extraordinary out of the ordinary. And with that, I'm going to tell you one final story. How am I doing on time? Pretty good? Okay. All right, I have two more minutes. I'm going to tell you one final story. My favorite brewery in my hometown is Oak and Iron. I saw something on their Facebook page recently that I just love.
Just not enough.
Good, right? But even better were the comments. Brian comments, looks like a good response to run the Troop 5K, which is happening in a couple weeks. Kennedy, carb loading for beer making, but you know what we're all thinking, this is pretzel porn, man. Ellen is right on with that. But my takeaway from this section here is just, if you cover up your logo, do you recognize you? Cover up your logo on your website, on your social channels. Do you sound different? Do you sound like a different brand, a different company? Are you really embracing the opportunity that you have there? All right. Are you wondering about my brother? Yeah, what happened? That was a cliffhanger. Did he buy the koozie? He did. He went on vacation in Cocoa Beach, Florida. My brother is an engineer at Intel out of Chandler, Arizona. He works for Intel. And he travels from time to time, and he goes and visits other engineers and other Intel plants around the world. The first time he went to Malaysia to visit some engineers over there, he thought, I gotta bring a present, right? So he went down to Costco, and he got a case of Hershey's chocolate bar, and he walked into the conference room on the first day, and he sort of like put it on the conference room table. And this is like how I imagine that he does it. He kind of backs up slowly, and he's like, here, I bring you chocolate from America. Blessings. Like, that's in my head how I imagine he's doing it. And they were like, yeah, we have those in the cafeteria, Bill. So, stupid American. So the next time my brother goes to Malaysia, he's like, you know what? I'm going to bring you something that you don't have. So he brings a freaker. Gives it to his buddy there. He goes to Great Britain. He brings it there as well. Back in Malaysia, and you know that guy, he loved that one with the bikini. Back in Malaysia, again, he even found a home use for them. He puts it around the can of spray oil in his kitchen. My point of telling you this story, oh, actually, and guess what we got for Christmas? Freakers! My point of telling you the story is that my brother used to be a koozie guy. Like, anytime any of us would be, like, walking through an airport or anything, it was like picking up koozies for Bill, because this one might work for him, maybe he'll like this one. He used to be a koozie guy, but now he is like all in on freaker. Like, he is a freaker guy. And why is that? It's because they told a better story. This freaker acts just like any other can koozie out there. But they told a better story that connected with him. And that, my friends, is really the essence of being bigger and bolder and braver. And so I'm going to take one second, Larry. I just want to say, I've thrown a lot of stuff at you today. And it's like, I know a lot of you are sitting there going, like, I don't have the budget for this. I don't have the people for this. I'm already, like, completely overwhelmed in my own job. And, like, that's okay. Like, I totally get it. But just do one thing. Just do one thing that's going to make a difference. Do less and obsess, as I say. Obsess about that one thing that you feel could really connect with the people that you're trying to connect with. All right? Will you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah? That sounded like so, like, not really. Will you do this? Yes. All right. Thank you so much, you guys, because free your mind and your ass will follow. Thank you.
Are there questions for Anne? She's going to be hanging out down here by the stage, I'll bet, in a few minutes. I will remind you, please, to rate this session in your app. Please open it up. Give stars to this lady so that we can get her back next year. Yeah, we want to know how to win the bottle of Freem.
I know, exactly. Win the bottle of Freem. I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. Yes! This is seven.
Nope, don't get it back. There we go. Don't forget that the safety open house is starting in the 700s, 4 o'clock. There's beer there. It's really good beer. Show up. Thanks.